Howdy, y'all. Welcome
Hey,
back.
it's very Texas of you.
So I definitely know that my phone is listening to everything because we never discussed that you were going to Texas over text messages, but we did discuss it verbally.
That's true.
And during your time in Texas, my entire algorithm was bars in Texas.
What?
I was literally watching people in like Dallas bars.
Oh, girl, that's amazing. It is kind of scary. That actually happened to me. I was talking to a friend who is obsessed with like the food scene in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And randomly on one of my platforms, I got a pop-up ad for like a food passport. You know, try different restaurants and you kind of stamp it.
Yeah.
Like mark them off the passport, and I was like, how did they know?
Anyone who tries to convince us that our phones aren't listening, you're lying.
But sometimes it's good. Like sometimes if you're trying to buy a car or you're in the market for something that you're trying to purchase, you know, the right companies will kind of like, you see good ads, you see the
That's
savings,
true.
You see, you know, sales. So it has its pros and cons.
If you want your boyfriend to buy you a ring, if you want him to go into therapy.
Yeah, just like start talking into his phone.
Absolutely. Well, my weekend sucked. I had a
Why?
Headache for most of it. But it did give me an idea for this podcast. So I really hate taking Tylenol. One, because I can't swallow pills. I have to take the children's version
like
of
the
Tylenol.
The gummy bear ones? Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just like as I've grown older, they taste more disgusting. Like your palate matures and so you can actually taste the medicine
as you're
chewing it.
Did it help?
It did help. Of course, it always helps.
I
take the pain too far. There was only one time in my entire life where I had pain that was so bad because I couldn't swallow pills.
Mm-hmm.
When I had my wisdom teeth out and they were surgically removed. So they actually they weren't pulling on them. They actually had to cut open my mouth. The orthodontist or whatever you call him, surgeon, gave me a prescription for liquid morphine.
Must've been a nice little trip you were having.
Yeah. Now I'm the kind of person that doesn't like the feeling of not being in control. So that's typically why I avoid strong medications like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got home and the freezing started to wear off, I have never experienced a pain like this in my entire life. I was chugging that liquid morphine like I had been an addict for years. I spent my days just like looking at the clock. You could only take it every 8 hours. Mm-hmm. And I would just look at the clock and wait for the next time that I could take more.
So folks, if you're trying to guess what we're going to talk about on this episode, it is, drum roll,
pain.
Pain, pain, pain.
Pain, pain, pain. Yeah. So part of my weekend was staring at this bottle of Tylenol.
Oh, I
waiting.
Thought you still had the liquid morphine.
I wish, because it was damn tasty. Similar to many of us, I have always been curious about how Tylenol works. You swallow it, and then somehow your pain just kind of numbs. And I think the question many of us have asked is, how does it know where to go in your body to numb the pain? Like, I had a headache, right? So how did it know that it had to go to my nerve cells in my head?
Right.
Because other parts of my body weren't more numb.
So usually in the pill form, it dissolves into your bloodstream.
Uh-huh.
And so like you have pain sensors. And so Tylenol doesn't fix your problem. So if you have a broken arm, it doesn't help your bone come back together. What it does, your brain picks up the chemical of the pain sensor and it absorbs it. That's the solution of these painkillers.
Yes, but how does it know where?
It's not about where. It's your pain sensors.
You did a great job at summarizing the more scientifical explanation, which I'm about to talk about.
My biology degree came in handy for the first time in my life.
You have a biology degree?
I do.
Okay, well, there we go. Now we understand. We're not actually just born with these. These are developed.
Pain sensors.
They're called nociceptors.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did know that.
Oh, for God's sakes. Okay, so nociceptors run from our spinal cord to our skin. Nociceptors only fire off signals if something damages them. So take, for example, you have a kitchen knife with a pointy tip. Mm. If you press your finger against the pointy tip of the knife, you're not going to feel pain. You're just going to feel pressure. So your nociceptors are not activating when you're putting the pressure on it. However, if you were to puncture the tip of it, you would surpass the threshold of the nociceptor, and that is when you would start to feel pain. When those cells are damaged and you take the Tylenol, it does flow through your whole body, but it's only going to travel to the enzymes that are damaged. Now, there's a whole other boring explanation of chemicals that are releasing, but exactly to your point, and actually it's worth mentioning that Tylenol and ibuprofen act differently.
Yes. Ibuprofen has the ability to thicken your blood, whereas Tylenol, it doesn't have the ingredient to thicken the blood, which is why people with blood clots or heart issues or, you know, strokes, things like that, that have that in their history, they often should never take things like Advil, ibuprofen, which are part of the same family, but they're generally advised to take Tylenol or aspirin.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dr. Fariba.
You're welcome. Just to kind of simplify things a bit, your body's like a little machine. If you think of it like that, anything that happens to your body, whether it's pain or happiness or whatever, your brain is like, ooh, okay, let's figure this out. This is coming into the factory. Now I need to organize it. I need to figure out where it needs to go. And so, yeah, when you take things like Tylenol or Advil, the little chemicals get released in the bloodstream, and then your brain kind of sorts it out, organizes it of where it needs to go.
Bodies are a fascinating thing.
They are so fascinating. It's insane. Like, physiology is one of the coolest things ever.
The reason I'm really interested in the topic of pain, though, we often save screenshots from thoughts about podcasts, topics that we want to discuss. And one of the screenshots I had saved was talking about how much unrequited love hurts. As I had just finished watching a whole bunch of TikTok videos trying to help me feel better about my broken heart.
Right.
And they were doing it through proven methods for other people that have helped them out. Oh, if you just go cold turkey and da da da. But I was just kind of in this space of like, emotion hurts. Love hurts. And there's no two ways about it. I can't take Tylenol to help my feelings of unrequited love. Like, that's not going to help me. And similarly, you trying to tell me on TikTok just to do this and at least get up and eat something isn't helping me today.
You can't blank slate. You can't like throw a generalized type of advice to everyone and think that their pain is less. Just because people are coping, it doesn't mean your pain has gone away. Now, pain is such an interesting thing because I think everyone experiences pain differently. Two people can have the exact same experience, but they could experience the pain completely differently. And so this is why, whether it's physical pain or mental pain, we cannot assume we're all experiencing the same thing. And two, that we're all experiencing at the same level. Doctors do this a lot. They ask, or even psychologists do this, where they say, out of 1 to 10, what's your pain? It's happened to me 3 times in my life where I've had to rate my pain from 1 to 10.
I find it to be such a hard question to answer.
I find it to be not just hard, but clearly based on my experience, it's inaccurate.
Yeah.
Because I only go to the doctor when I'm in a shit ton of pain. Mm-hmm. Like I have a high pain tolerance already. And so usually when I'm at the doctor, for example, this one instance, I said, I've broken a few bones in my life. So I know when my bones are broken. Like I know the feeling, I know the tingle, I know the sensation. So I went to the doctor and I said, hey, I'm definitely sure my hand is broken. And he grabbed it, he massaged it, he turned it. And I don't say anything because what am I gonna do? Yell? Yeah, I'm in pain, but what do you want me to do? So he's like, no way you're in pain. Because if you were in pain, if your hand was broken, you'd be yelling right now. Oh. So I said, okay. I said, well, it hurts. Like, it fucking hurts. Like, yeah, I'm internally yelling. But what do you want me to do? You want me to yell in your office right now? And he goes, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your pain? I said, it's like a 9. And he's like, it's not a 9. I said, listen, get an x-ray. If I'm wrong, I will never question your medical judgment ever again when I come visit you. And he took the bet. It was broken in 3 spots. Another time I had I called 911 because I had a really, really bad abdominal pain. They came and they're like, what's your pain? 1 to 10. I'm like, it's like an 11. And he's like, I've seen an 11. You're not an 11. He's like, you probably have your period. Just take some Tylenol and it'll be fine. Girl, my appendix had burst. The surgeon at the hospital, by the time I went there, was like, if you had been 20 minutes late, there was so much poison in my body. They had to keep me post-surgery for 2 weeks because there was so much poison in my body. And I'm sitting there being like, I'm an 11. So imagine my 11, my pain tolerance of 11 is clearly not the same pain tolerance as him, right? Mm-hmm. And the way I express it, the way I talk about it. And this is the same thing with emotional pain or mental pain, where just because someone is smiling and just because someone is getting on with their day and they're coping and listening to your TikToks and your advice on how to deal with shit, it doesn't mean their pain has just magically disappeared. They're struggling with that shit internally, and they're struggling with it on a minute by minute basis. Whether it's something as a heartbreak, which most of us have experienced, or things that are deeper, like if you're in abusive relationships, whatever it is, people are dealing with shit. And I find it so irritating that oftentimes we just blank slate solutions to all these problems we have.
I think we talked about this a lot. I think some women probably have a higher pain tolerance just because they're women and they have their periods.
Birth.
Childbirth. Yeah. Like we build up a higher pain tolerance due to that. And I think it's really unfair that men get this title of like they have the higher pain tolerance because they're men.
But we don't want to go into the same rabbit hole of, you know, assuming that their pain is different. Maybe physical pain to them is easier to deal with because I'm going to be stereotypical. I'm going to say generally men, you know, they're usually in sports and they're roughing mm-hmm. around. And so physical pain might be easier to deal with for them. But mental pain, psychological pain, emotional pain, they generally don't even know how to deal with it. They bury it down.
Yeah, I think that's almost twofold because maybe they don't know how to deal with it, but I think also they don't feel as deep as women can. And again, we're really generalizing here.
Yeah.
So my unrequited love at this stage in my life, I still feel just as deeply as I did when I was 20 years old. So just because I've had life experience and learned how to deal with it mm-hmm. doesn't make it any less impactful on me mm-hmm. just because alongside that I have learned how to feel even deeper. So mm-hmm. it does cut just as deep. But then I'm faced with men who haven't emotionally matured and they don't feel it the same way, or they're not able to understand it the same way.
Right. Right. So you're saying that even if they are experiencing the same thing, you don't necessarily think that their pain level is the same as yours.
Yeah.
And it could just be that they're not aware of it. So like, for example, if someone pinches me, I'm not fazed even mm-hmm. depending on the pain level, because my brain has just disassociated that level of pain. There's just like, you're fine. Don't even think about it. And so maybe that's kind of how they're dealing with their emotional shit. It's almost like, this is nothing. Don't even think about it.
Yeah. And it's funny because I'm actually thinking of a guy in particular, been in and out of my life, and he can empathize with me. He was one of the people that I had unrequited love from. Mm-hmm. And he has articulated on many occasions that he can understand how I feel. But I think that even though he has had unrequited love in his own life, mm-hmm. I am not sure he has felt it as deeply as I have, the pain as deeply as I have. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but the reason I think that is because even though he'll say to me, I understand how you feel, he's still sitting by my side saying that and exposing me to that pain saying that. If you were to flip it and I was putting someone through that, the minute I knew that they were experiencing that kind of pain, I would immediately step away. Because I know just how painful that is, and I would never want to put someone through that.
That sounds like more he's sympathetic than empathetic.
Right. But it could be because to your point earlier, he doesn't know, he's not aware of that kind of pain. That's what I'm saying.
Which is why I don't know if I would say he's empathetic. Right. I think he's actually falls in more a sympathy, like he feels bad that you're going through it, but he would never understand what you're going through.
Exactly.
Which is the difference, right? Yeah.
The pain of love.
The pain of love.
Love fucking hurts.
It does.
Love hurts. Like, it doesn't get any easier. I think people that say that, I don't know. I think you're lying. Or I think you just don't feel as deeply. I think maybe you just numbed yourself.
People say love gets easier.
Or like the feeling of heartbreak gets easier. No. But I think those people have just numbed themselves as they've gone through life.
As they progress to the next relationships, I think because of, and again, maybe I'm wrong, but because of the pain they've experienced previously, they've just protected themselves.
Yeah.
So they have like a little guard. So not a lot of people can go deeper and deeper into mm-hmm. their like love threshold. Unfortunately, if you're not completely exposed and vulnerable and risking it all, you also don't get the privilege of being in this fantastic place of love.
Yeah.
Right? But the problem with that is, with this deep, intense, passionate love comes the worst heartbreak.
Mm-hmm.
And I know women are going to resonate with me. Has anyone ever broken your heart where you have physical pain?
Absolutely.
I felt my heart break.
Mm-hmm.
I felt it break into pieces.
Yep.
And it's so interesting to me because the first time it happened, I thought, I will never let a man do this to me again. I'm going to protect myself. The second time I fell in love, which has only been twice, the same thing happened.
I think it's very hard to forget how to love. I think once you know how to love, and this is why I really hate that narrative of, you know, don't be a fool. It does draw a negative connotation toward a very genuine emotion that we should have, which is the ability to love. And if you try to numb that, then what are you doing to yourself? Mm. So it's a shame to shame people for putting their emotions in front of them and giving their emotions and trusting someone.
It's a real
shame that we shame that.
The idea of fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me is in its core correct, because we're not meant to be walking around like fools. And I'm not talking about fools like being vulnerable. It's not that you're being foolish, but just like at work, just like you have to have basic common sense to get through life, it's the same thing when you're dealing with human beings. Not every single person is an angel from heaven. That's just not the case. And so it doesn't mean you don't speak to anyone ever again, but you have to know who to trust, who to not trust. This is part of growing up. The advice that we're hearing does apply correctly to certain circumstances. The problem with the advice, though, they don't necessarily specify that is only for certain situations. So people are walking around here being like, I'm no fool and I'm going to be guarded and I'm not going to let anyone in. And or if they do let people in, like as you just said, they feel foolish. They feel ashamed. This is why women in certain relationships are so afraid to leave. This is why strong women, women that you would never guess are in toxic relationships, because God forbid if someone found out that they've been through that, the type of judgment they would get or the type of backlash they would get. I'm going to share this. This happened to me and I don't even know if you and I have ever talked about this. There was a very, very short period of my life where I was going through a lot. I was in a physically abusive relationship. It started very harmless. It started with silly things like if he was upset with me, he like slapped me on the arm. Or I remember the next time it was like a little pinch on my arm. And then if I dressed a certain way, he would make fun of me, like he would put me down. And then the slapping on the arm went into a slap on the face. The only thing I could think about was, how can I tell people? They're going to think I'm an idiot. Imagine I'm going through something like this. And because of the worry I have of society's perception of me, I didn't talk about it. I only talked about it, I think, years after. Now, you know me. You know the kind of person I am, my personality. You would never think I would even let a guy take that step, even to begin with. But then when you think you like someone, you make excuses, right? And then the pain isn't about the pain that you're getting from them. It's now about the pain of social perceptions, the judgment, the emotional like embarrassment, feeling like an idiot, all of that stuff. Sending messages that you're a fool if you do this is toxic, because people sit there and they're like, ooh, I don't want to be considered a fool. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be embarrassed.
Physical and emotional abuse aren't on the same level at all. However, they do have the same outcomes in a lot of cases. It's still pain,
yeah.
And you still feel foolish. So when you come on to TikTok and you're watching motivational videos talking about how not to be a fool, how not to let a man treat you, it is great. It is positive to get that information out there and to remind people, like, don't put yourself in this situation. But at times it still can be a little shaming, right? Because they're saying to you, like, I would never do this. I would never let my friends be in this. And they're kind of blowing over exactly how you just described your situation.
Why wouldn't you leave?
Yeah. And so, and these things start in an intimate environment. You trust the person. Just because you're emotionally abused or physically abused, it's because you've trusted the person to begin with. I think a lot of people have been emotionally abused, so they can relate more to that.
Yeah.
And that feeling of, how did they get there? It's because you thought of the person as a good person and that never wavered because you loved them.
Yeah, we make excuses for them.
Yeah, right? And it's the same thing with physical abuse.
It's the same thing. Everyone experiences pain differently. Like, I'm still not sitting here assuming that whatever I've gone through is the same as whatever someone else has gone through. Everyone does it differently and everyone processes things differently. Thankfully, I was able to get out of internalizing it and blame, like, self-blaming, because I did go through that post. Actually, you know this, like, I was also in an emotionally abusive relationship. But a lot of times you sit there and you think, it's my fault. I shouldn't have said this to him to provoke him. It's my fault. I shouldn't have done this. It's my fault. Or they turn around and they blame you for things. And you're like, you know what? You're right. I could see why this upset you. And then when things end, even after the fact, you sit there and you're like, you question yourself again. If I didn't cope with it the way I did, and if I didn't have like people around me and my brain, like everything goes into it, I would still be internalizing it. There are women who have had emotional, men and women, excuse me, because men also go through it. There are humans who have experienced things like 10 years ago and they're still coping with it.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean I coped with it better.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean my way of doing it was correct. That's just the process they need to heal from it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And so you can't even generalize recovery. We can't even sit here and say, oh, well, your recovery time after a broken bone should essentially be 2 to 4 weeks. No, because my body is different than your body. I'm going to have different sensory nerves. My pain tolerance is different. My lifestyle is different. Some people can afford to really rest for 4 weeks and stay off their leg. Some people can't. And so the bone is not fully properly healed. It is something that I think both people in medicine, people in therapy industries, I hope they're aware of it. I hope they're aware that you can't just blank slate pain for everyone. Unfortunately, that hasn't been my experience with the medical profession. I think they're kind of taught a certain way of being. In order for them to do their job well, they almost have to have a certain level of emotional block.
I firmly believe, I'm not a doctor, but I firmly believe that because I've never been able to swallow pills, I've subsequently never been able to take adult medication, I have a lower threshold for what is required in my body to fight pain, because children's medication is weaker.
Right.
And I only take the dosage that is required for children. Because of that, I believe I haven't built up a tolerance to it. I am aware that I also have high anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so things affect me mentally quicker because I'm always thinking about, you know, how is this going to affect me? Right. And that's mostly when it comes to the morphines, the NyQuils, like those kind of like suppressant medications.
Right.
Like, I'm the person that has the heart palpitations because I'm like, is this going to put me to sleep?
Yeah. You think the worst case scenario.
Yeah. But coming back to that time when I had my wisdom teeth out, I was forced to take that laughing gas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a small girl, like I'm a tiny, tiny girl.
Mm-hmm.
And they had an anesthesiologist there. I understand that they do the weight calculation and all that stuff. But I think that they overdosed me in that chair. And truly, I think that's where my panic attacks actually started. Because when they put me under, I think they gave me too much.
Right.
And I was hallucinating like no other. Mm-hmm. Like it was a horrible experience.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually had to give me oxygen to bring me a little bit out of it because I was freaking out and I was like moving around and I couldn't control my body. So I think that there's definitely, I believe in science and I understand, you know, there's a calculation to all these medications, but I also think that there's probably elements of my body that weren't taken into consideration during that math equation when they were calculating how much laughing gas I would need.
The reason your tolerance is low is because of your stuff in your head, right? Because like you don't like swallowing pills. That's more mental. And so when the doctor is sitting there, the surgeons are sitting there, anesthesiologists are sitting there calculating, that's standardized based on your physiology.
Yes.
And so it's almost like, how do you bring the two together? And I do understand it from their perspective because when they practice, they have to practice in the best interest of the general or standardized way, something that can apply to most people, the exceptional cases, and they have to kind of like figure out. In your case, they really didn't ask you how many times do you take medicine, but I also don't know if you share that information with them.
I did not.
Right.
But every single time I've been in a dentist chair going through procedure after that point,
you've made a point to say
I've made a point to say it. Yeah. And then the only other time I've actually been put to sleep, this was actually cool. This was my first time ever being put to sleep. I didn't know what it was going to be like, but it was one of those procedures where they're just doing a checkup.
Right.
And I only had to be asleep for 5 minutes.
Okay.
And I didn't know that they basically are able to calculate the exact amount for me to be asleep for just that amount of time.
Yeah.
It's very cool. I lucked out with that anesthesiologist because I was a wreck. There was only two times in my life where the public could see me like that. The first one was on a plane. It was my first plane ride. Sorry to all the people on that plane. I was fully in the back row having severe panic attacks the entire hour of that flight.
Did they have to come on the PA and say, is there a doctor on board?
No.
See, I have a whole plan.
To get me on a flight?
Yeah, because like we're going to venture into a lovely city one day. I don't know. I'm gonna figure it out. I think I could probably convince you to either do specifically Paris if we're doing like a city, or I could convince you to do Italy with me.
Oh,
but
yes,
I think the way I would do it is I would make sure that the way we travel is the way I like to travel. And so it's like it's a holiday from the moment you're done packing in your house. The holiday starts.
Oh, I do think I'm one of those people that would benefit from like having to take care of a child on a plane. Anything to really distract
right,
me.
Right.
Yeah. And I think children are like, that's a big distraction. Mm-hmm. Pressure
right.
of having to keep it quiet.
Perfect. So anyone going to Italy,
yeah,
who has infants, and particularly really like difficult infants,
yeah,
that you just don't want to deal with on the flight.
Yes.
Cynthia is here to be of assistance.
I will be. That will be a gift for me. Okay, so if you had to think about, and I still haven't answered myself in this. If you were to take an actual time in your life where you had physical pain due to a broken bone or one of the instances that you just named. So I'm going to go with for myself. I'm going to go with the time of the wisdom teeth post freezing versus a time of intense emotional pain. So for myself, I'm going to go with the time that my first boyfriend broke my heart. Mm-hmm. If you were forced to redo one of them, which one would you volunteer to go through again?
Physical pain. I've also never been shot, stabbed, or like my guts are bleeding out. So it's all relative, folks.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'd definitely be interested to ask a mother this. I mean, I know childbirth, a lot of mothers say that they just blank childbirth out of their memories. And so that's why a lot of mothers will have their second and third child, no problem, because they've just blanked out the pain. Emotional pain or physical pain, which would you rather redo of the worst two instances in your life? Mm-hmm. Longevity of heartbreak can be really awful. And sometimes it actually does go beyond just that physical pain of you feeling your heart break. You're now making yourself sick because you haven't slept. You can't eat and all of these things. You can actually develop actual ailments from heartbreak because you're so malnourished or, you know, everything's being thrown off. I think this is actually a good awareness piece for those people who don't understand what it's like to have a mental illness because if we're both answering this question this way and we're assuming that a lot of people would answer similarly, that means that most of us are unwilling to deal with that mental pain first. We would rather deal with physical pain than have to re-deal with any kind of mental.
Well, the thing is that we're unwilling. It's that we would prefer not to because we have a certain level of sanity of we know how horrible it
exactly
was, and so we prefer not to. Now, with that being said, if I were to think about the pain I experienced when my appendix burst, and that's whoever you talk to, that's high pain. I can barely remember it.
Yeah.
I just remember that it was bad.
Yes.
But I couldn't I couldn't vividly describe the pain to you.
Yeah.
Whereas when I had my heartbreak the first time, I can vividly remember time slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
I remember he was talking and I was like, I can't hear you. Like, I just, my everything just broke. I don't know what that says about our brain as well. Like, I don't know what it says about mental trauma and how the muscles in our brain have absorbed that, because it's instilled in us now. It's a stamp.
Is emotional pain more traumatic than physical pain? I think we're answering that based on our responses to the question of what would we rather relive.
Yeah. But scientifically, like, I'd love to read more and see if it is, why. Because people who have, like, been, you know, gone through in, like, war, or what about those people? I want to ask them as well. Like, how do you vividly remember that pain? And how has it translated into the rest of your life?
Or when you think about times when you went through physical pain, you're not thinking about the physical pain, you're thinking about the trauma that you went through. At least that's what I'm thinking about when I think about my wisdom tooth. I'm thinking about me sitting on that couch and just, like, watching the clock.
Yeah.
It was like the traumatic experience of it all.
Yeah. Yeah. And people who have gone through massive recovery, they always talk about the post-recovery being the most difficult, because, you know, they deal with depression and addiction and like overcoming a lot of mental struggles through their post-recovery, not just the physical pain. Our bodies are this brilliant machines. And when you experience a certain level of pain, your body goes into shock. And that's almost like a natural painkiller, because your body releases these to almost protect you. Because pain itself reduces your immune system, and pain itself causes more damage. And so your body instantly shuts those sensories.
See, and that's why that same effect with emotional pain, though, is not good. Because you trying to numb yourself so that you don't experience it again has longer negative effects on you, because now you're just avoiding feeling that positive emotion because you don't want to feel the negative emotion again. It's the same reason why they say, oh, I wish it was like the old days with kids and playgrounds, and how we used to be more free about things. Kids would play on these steel monkey bars,
or like eat sand with
nothing. Yeah, there was no tire. What do you have that, like, rubber tire underneath now?
Yeah.
No, there was just gravel. I was falling headfirst onto gravel. It's not about you building a higher pain tolerance when you break that bone. It's about you becoming fearless. And so that you still want to take risks as you get older, but you just understand how to navigate the space better, but you don't become more fearful. But with love and emotional pain, we're more inclined, for whatever reason, to try and avoid it. And then we are stuffing that normal emotion of trying to feel love further down. And then that's how you learn how to not love properly, because you're just trying to avoid the heartbreak. Love hurts.
It does.
But it's part of life.
Part of life.
You can't live if you don't love.
But it's also not life. If you don't have love in your life, or have ever experienced that kind of being in love, you have not lived.
Yeah.
And I fully stand by that.
Yeah.
I would rather have have experienced a great love, and in the same sentence, with the same person, experience the biggest heartbreak of my life than have never experienced either of those. And I'm very well aware that with great love comes with great heartache, and I'll take it.
I think that's really what it is. I'm attracted to people that want to go all in, because I'm a person that is willing to take the risk to go all in.
Yeah. You have to.
Yeah.
And then what's the point?
What is the point? What's the point of participating in, like, a scientific romance. Just
don't half-ass shit.
Yeah, no.
In anything, be happy.
Well, I mean, now you sound like the TikTokers.
No, not. But even if you want to up and make mistakes and go through shit and
fall on your face, it's okay.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it so you can be happy.
This is why I always tell people when my friends are going through heartbreaks, I'm like, dude, I have done nothing but fall on my face. Mm-hmm. The last 20 years, I have done nothing but fall on my face. I have not had one successful relationship, and I've put my all into every single one, and I've come out the fool out of every single one. But look at me. I'm still standing. I don't think of myself as a fool.
Yeah, but you know, when you're going through that heartbreak, it's so hard for you to not think that you're the only person experiencing
it. It's true.
So it's like, you know, everyone can be like, it's going to be okay. And you're like, no.
Rewind to just last week when I was literally just telling you that. I'm like, no, it's just me. No one wants to love me.
I'm like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I understand it.
I get it.
Okay, well, we'll go play, what's that doctor game?
Doctor.
With your buzzes when you can't.
Oh, Operation?
Operation.
Oh my God, way back.
Yeah.
I want to get that. Does anyone even remember that? I love board games.
Yeah, so good. I'm not playing board games with you. You're too competitive. I'm never playing Monopoly with you.
Just ever. Once.
No.
People are so much fun.
I know because you're already plotting. You're trying to move into Boardwalk and Park Place.
Take it all.
Yeah.
I'll take it all. And then I'll convince you to sell me.
You will. You will, and then all of a sudden I'll have no hotels.
Like, Cynthia, you don't need all that crap to deal with. I'll deal with it. I'll be your property manager.
It's so true. It's exactly how it would go. All right, well, we'll see you next week.
All right, guys. See ya.